promptly escape the clutches of a maximum security corporate system to the open source community. Today, still wanted by the state, they broadcast as soldiers of freedom. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the Dark City Radio Crew.
Hello and welcome to Dark City Radio. You're listening to, well, I'm your host Sarah, and this is the Innocent Season I'm going to slow down again because last time I started really fast. You're listening to the Innocent Season, and this is where we look at different cases of people who are innocent who have been wrongly convicted. And what the actual aim is of these series of shows is to actually sort of put together a resource so that people know if you do get arrested for something and you are innocent and you haven't committed that crime, we don't want you to make the same mistakes that other people have made. We want to streamline it and make this a resource so people got somewhere where they can come and have a look and learn from other people that have been through this. And this is something that has happened to an alarmingly number of people. The amount of people that are actually in prison for things that they haven't done is alarming, and it is a subject that needs addressing. Nobody here is saying that people who have committed crimes should get away with it. If you've committed a crime, then obviously that needs addressing. I'm not saying that the prison system, the way that it runs right now, is the ideal thing for that, because it's not. That needs addressing as well, and we're going to deal with that on show three. Yes, we are the world's only non-corporate free radio stream, actually, in the world, Dark City Radio, and it's been going for quite a few years now as well. So if you have got a story and you do want to get it out there, then just let us know. And also, if you want to join in with this show, you're very welcome to join in. Like, if you just want to ask questions or speak to some of the guests or anything like that, then you are very welcome. And you can do that by either Skyping in on Bob's Backyard, or you can phone in on 0161 2980 298, or if you're calling from abroad, it's +44 2980 298. But remember to get your microphones muted when you come in, because otherwise we get feedback and that. Now, Amanda's got hers muted at the moment, and that's what you can hear on mine. So if everyone just, but we all do it, it's all, you know, so just make sure you keep your microphone muted if you do come in and you do Skype in. And then but all's welcome. Any questions you've got to ask, then we're all happy to answer. And we've got a lot of experts here, a lot of people who've been through a hell of a lot at the hands of the so-called justice system on the show today. We've got Martin Foran, who's a co-host. But we've also got the chat room as well, if you want to join in on the chat room. But look on the website, which is www.darkcityradio.com. The webs, and you'll see the chat room there. It comes up as Pages Chat. And then you can also ask questions via that as well. So please feel welcome to join in, because this is what Dark City is all about. It's about the ordinary people getting together and putting our stories out there and letting people know what is happening in the world, what is happening for us. And Dark City Radio is about solutions. We want to find the solutions here on this radio station. You know, we all know that this is happening, so what are we all going to do about it? We know that the Ministry of Justice also know that this is happening. So the Ministry of Justice, I'm asking you, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about all these mistakes that have been made over these years, all these innocent people that are serving a long time in prison, besides making money off of them in the prison system? What are you going to do about it? Are you going to actually take a step back and apologize? Are you going to take a step back and do the right thing? We all know now, eyes are on you. What are you going to do about it? Martin, do you want to say a little bit as your introduction as what you want to get from the Innocent Season?
Yes. I can help with advice. I fought for 40 years against the system, and it was a long, hard road. And I'm hoping to put my experience to use by helping people to help themselves, because The only way you will get the MPs, the courts, the Ministry of Justice to sit up and listen is by people uniting together and all helping each other. That is what I'm hoping to advise people that need the help. It taught me, I had about 10. Don't lose heart when you lose one appeal. I lost about 7 appeals and won the last 2, making me the only double miscarriage of justice in this country. My fight is over. I'm still fighting for compensation, but my appeal court fight is over, and I would like to try and get people to listen and teach them what to do to make them listen. And this is where Dark City Radio is wonderful with this. It helps us to come together and listen to each other's problems and help each other. So I'll pass you back over to Sarah now.
Thank you very much for that, Martin. It's a brilliant reason. And Martin genuinely does mean that. He is in this for other people. He hardly gives a second thought to himself. This man has fought for a long time, you know, for this. And that's why it's so important for all of us to stand up. There's so many people that lives have gone on hold and have missed out on living on massive parts of their life, you know. And all they want to see is justice and the right thing done, you know. And that's what we teach our children as from a young age, you know. If you do something wrong, stand up, admit it, apologise, do something to make it better, and then we can all move forward together. And until that starts happening in this world on a whole, then it's never going to be a very nice place to live, really. People need to take responsibility. The government needs to take responsibility. And today, our main topic of conversation on this season's show is actually joint enterprise, yeah. And it isn't a law, joint enterprise. I can't remember what the actual term is, but Janet will let us know. But it's over 300 years old, and it's where even a knowing look can get you arrested and put into prison for murder just by looking at somebody, by receiving a phone call, hiring a car. All these things might sound a bit out there that I'm actually talking about, but these are actually factors that have led to people serving life sentences in prison. And today, to highlight joint enterprise, I've got two amazing women on the radio show. When we Martin have, we've got two amazing women, Janet Cunliffe, and also Amanda McCracken. I'm not very good at pronouncing second names, by the way, as you probably can tell. But they're going to tell us both their stories briefly, sort of fill us in. We have had Janet on before, and if you look in the archives, you can actually find her show. But I'm going to start with you, Janet. Do you want to just sort of give a brief outline to what happened to you and your family?
My son was convicted of murder in January 2008 with two other boys. But what happened is there was an altercation on the street when a man came out of his house and accosted my son and his friends. He made the mistake of thinking that they'd caused some kind of damage to a mini digger and chased them up the street. Now, one of the boys kicked him, and unfortunately that led to his death. It burst a major artery in his neck. Blood was flowing to his brain, and that's what killed him. And it was just one single blow by one person. However, 5 people were arrested and charged with murder that night, and after a 6-week trial 3 of them were convicted, but it was the use of joint enterprise that convicted all 3 of them, when realistically just one of them should have been on trial. Or even if they were all on trial, it should have been about finding out which person had actually inflicted that blow, and they should have been found guilty and then given the punishment that they deserved. It was only after the case and after my son's conviction and me realizing that something had gone terribly wrong that I started to try and look up the meaning of the word joint enterprise. And when I Googled it, there was no such thing. And when I looked in law books, I couldn't find it. It was almost like it had only just appeared overnight, and no one could tell me anything about it, what it meant. And I couldn't even look up other cases. So eventually, after sort of a good few years, I came across other people who'd been in the same predicament, and it shocks me to the core to actually realise that I know of at least 500 cases where people are maintaining innocence to a crime of murder, and they're all murder, and they're serving life sentences. And some of these sentences are as long as 35 years. So when you give an 18-year-old a life sentence of 35 years, his entire life has been cut short completely. And he hasn't murdered anyone. And that doesn't make any sense whatsoever, morally or ethically in any way, shape or form to me.
Can I just pass a comment there? What a lot of people tend to forget is when there is a case of miscarriage of justice, it's just not the person in prison that suffers. Listen to Janet. You must realise how hard it hits the families, the loved ones of that person. And this is a pure evil law. It just destroys whole life, not just the person that's in prison. It will destroy the whole family. And this is so wrong, so wrong.
For my family, I mean, I just felt like I was dead as soon as Jordan was convicted. But I had another son who fortunately for him was actually acquitted. But it was no compensation because I was taking one boy home and leaving the other one to have to serve a life sentence. And neither of my children laid a finger on that man that night. And neither of them knew anything about it, least of all Jordan, because Jordan was actually blind and had transplant surgery 2 weeks after his conviction. So the actual court itself didn't want to know about his disability, didn't want the jury to know about his disability. And then when the case ended, they gagged us so that the media couldn't write about his disability, so that the whole public, so anyone in the whole of the world was not allowed to know that my son was blind. So not only did they crucify us as a family, they shut us up. And they shut us up forever. And it took me 2 years to get the gagging order lifted so that I could actually talk about his disability and talk about his case. So not only is the justice system flawed because it allows innocent people to go to prison, it knows that it's letting innocent people to go to prison. And the judges are hiding that by gagging the family of that innocent person and not allowing us to actually fight for justice publicly. But, you know, it takes a long time to get the media to turn around and listen to you, even without being gagged, because once the big story's out there and it's the sensational story about feral children and wolf packs and gangs and knives and guns and all of these things, the actual story about us is, because it's the opposite, quite so sexy to be talking about mothers crying and, you know, and the misery that we all suffer. We just get lost and left behind.
Yeah, you often do. And it's so obvious to anyone listening that Jordan grew up in a loving family. You know, it's so obvious to anyone that knows Janet or has seen Janet's work over the years that this woman is totally devoted to her children. You know, this child has not gone without necessity of love. This child has not gone without what makes a person a good person. This child has had all that, and he grew up in an environment with all that. He's not somebody who's just been forgotten about. And the sad truth is, a lot of these joint enterprises or similar crimes like this, where the person is innocent, the person is forgotten about. They might not have the support that Jordan has. And that's why it's so important for when we're focusing on joint enterprises, that we want to see it being scrapped. We want to see joint enterprise being repelled. This is a lazy way of convicting people of murder. It's a lazy way of where you don't need the evidence, you don't need to investigate properly, you know, of convicting people. Should we hear your story, Amanda, about your son as well, please? Can you tell us what happened to Gerard, please?
Yes, sure, Sarah. Gerard and three of his friends, last July 2013, went out just to do some shopping. They went to a local retail park. if I give you some background first, prior to this actual incident, for about 2 years previous, Gerard had been sought from a young man known locally in the area. He was a known steroid user. He was a cage fighter and he had a bit of a reputation behind him. Him and his, you know, the family that the lad came from, they were, you know, they had a bit of a reputation in the area and stuff like that. Gerard, knowing this, you know, would never ever wanted to, you know, get involved or anything. But this lad had it in for Gerard, and when apparently, you know, that this house got raided or something, looking for drugs or something, this lad heard that Gerard had called, you know, he called Gerard a grass or something like that. Where to that effect, I can't remember whether he called Gerard a grass or Gerard had called him a grass or so. I don't know. But this lad had it in for Gerard, and, you know, on three separate occasions, the lad chased Gerard while he was driving his van, chased him home, made, you know, threats to kill him and stuff like that. One time he even knocked on Gerard's dad's door and, you know, demanded that Gerard came. His dad didn't know this lad was, and shouted Gerard and just said, you know, you need wanted at the door or something. Gerard came, and when he seen who it was, he, you know, really, he panicked. And the lad had said, you know, you and me, you know, I'm going to have you and stuff like that. And his dad was like, you know, what's this about? And he said, oh, it's nothing, Dad. It's, you know, I don't know. You know, Gerard like, felt quite embarrassed and stuff like that. The lad was younger than him, but Gerard did know of his reputation and was a little bit, you know, apprehensive about it. Anyway, another time, in the February prior to the incident as well, a few young men all went on holiday together to Thailand, and this young man in particular, he was on the flight. He was going to Thailand with a group of men. One of the men on the aeroplane was one of Gerard's friends. Gerard wasn't there. And conversation was just going on or something. This lad happened to mention Gerard and just, you know, oh, you know, I go out with Gerard and, you know, he's got a dog and stuff like this. This lad didn't like, you know, what the lad was saying. He said, you know, you need to shut up, you know, like that. Gerard called him, I don't know, called him a name or something like that. He's a dickhead or something like that, I'm not sure. And the lad tried to defend Gerard's name and just said, no, he's my mate and he's a good lad. He's, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with Gerard. Anyway, this lad assaulted Gerard's friend on the aeroplane and bit him on the head, beat him up on the aeroplane, bit him on the head, and they both got arrested. And when they landed in Dubai, the police came on, took them off, and eventually the police said to them, it's up to you, either sort of kiss and make up and you can go about your bother and go, you know, carry on with your holiday, or we will arrest you if you aren't going to do that and we'll send you back. Or so I think that both the lads had calmed down a bit and they carried on with the holiday. But Gerard's friend phoned Gerard up and just said, you know, what had just happened on the plane. And, you know, like, so Gerard's like back at home and he's panicking, you know, what's this in aid of? But, like, really scared and that, because, you know, the lads took this abroad with them and stuff like that. And Gerard still is unaware of, you know, what he's supposed to have done, other than, you know, the lad saying that he's a grass or something. Anyway, on this particular day, Gerard and a couple of his friends went to the retail park. Gerard had just come back off his holiday with his fiance. He's been with Tony for, you know, 8 years. They got engaged. They were, you know, starting to plan a family and stuff like that to settle down. Tony just, you know, she just graduated from university and the whole life's ahead of them. Gerard, with his friends, went to the retail park. The friend who was driving the car, Stephen, he stayed in the car because he hadn't wanted to go anyway. He was just like, you know, taking them as a favour because one of the lads wanted to buy a sack of dog food. Gerard and two of the lads went into a sports shop. This was all seen on CCTV because it was a big retail park, and you could see his friends sat outside, Steve and his neighbours, in the car waiting for them to come out. You seen Jared and his friends shopping in the shop. One of the lads bought some clothes and stuff. Jared came out of the shop, got back in the car, in the passenger side, followed by the other lad, and he got in the back. And then the other lad, he came out and he just said, I'm just going into the next shop for some dog food. It won't be a minute. He walked off to the shop. So Stephen drove the car out of the park and bay. And don't forget, this is in a big retail park, a busy Thursday afternoon, middle of the afternoon. Jared was wearing a pair of flip-flops and a pair of shorts, as was Stephen. And as Stephen pulls over into one of the parking bays a bit closer to the shop where the lad had gone for the dog food, he pulls over into there, and the three of them are sat in the car, the windows are down and stuff, playing a bit of music, and then Jared sees just ahead coming towards him. He sees this lad bouncing towards him, and that was Jared's words. And that's what he said. You know, witnesses said the two lads in the car said that's what Jared, he just said. You know, here's Jonathan, look, he's bouncing over here. And Stephen doesn't know, you know, he doesn't know who this lad is. He don't know. Jed has not said nothing to him. And he said, what do you mean? By the time he'd said that, the lad was at the side of the car, leaning into the window where Jared was sat, and telling Jared to get out, threatening him. He wanted to sort this out. Stephen's sitting there and he's saying, what are you doing? You know, who's this? And Jared says, just leave it, Stephen. It's okay, I'll sort it, it's okay. And the lad's telling Jared to get out the car. Jared refused because he was frightened, you know. And he tells me, Mum, I couldn't have run off, Mum. I had flip-flops on. And, you know, I knew I couldn't have got away. He'd have got me. So I think it was about over a minute. And the CCTV camera can see all this, the lad leaning into the car, trying to get Jared out. Eventually, Jared got out of the car. Stephen got out at one point and just said, leave him alone, get off me car, to the lad, because it was a new car, and leave him alone. He doesn't want to fight with you. The lad told Stephen to, you know, certain terms, you know, stay out of it. And Jared just said, Stephen, just leave it, just stay in the car. You know, I'll sort it, don't worry. I know Jared wants to take the lad away. This is what, you know, he's told the court he wants to take the lad away from the car because he felt quite embarrassed, and he knew that he was going to, like, pretty much beg the lad, really, not to fight with him, because he didn't want to fight with him, and he didn't really want his mates to hear him, like, pleading with him. So Jared gets out of the car. The lad's walking behind Jared, sort of, like, heading him towards a corner sort of thing, in front of a big shop. Camera's still on them. And then he gets in front of Jared so as to stop him from going any further. So now the camera's pointing at Jared's back and the lad's front. So you can see the lad stood there with clenched fists. And Jared, you can see the back of him. And he's making lots of gestures with his hands, trying to, you know, reason with the lad. At one point, you see Jared trying to shake the lad's hand. And, you know, he's telling me, Mum, I was saying, can we just leave it here? And, you know, can we just forget about it and stuff?
You're cutting up quite a bit there, Amanda. Can you hear me? I think we've seemed to have lost Amanda there. But this seems to be... Are you back? Well, she's not back.
No, I'm back, but I could finish Amanda's story off if she's not there, because I do know it quite well, if that would help in any way.
That would be perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, from what I believe and what I know of the CCTV footage, because it is there and it is available to see, it looks as if the aggressor is the guy who's had it in for Jared for quite some time, and he goes for Jared, and I think he's sort of kind of got his head in a headlock. The only thing that Jared does is he sort of swings for him and actually misses, at which point Jared's friend gets out of the car and sort of pulls Jared away out of a headlock, if you like. So, you know, it's almost like he's being rescued. His friend's trying to rescue him, and his friend sort of throws a blow at this guy, and he basically just falls down and he falls to the ground, and it's over as quickly as that. It's not two guys jumping on a man's head who's lay on the floor or anything like that. It's again very similar to Jordan's case. It's a single blow. And I think most people, after hearing Mandy's story, would actually think there was a great big level of self-defense in there rather than murder. But both of them went to trial, both, you know, Jared and his friend, and they were both convicted of murder and they both received a life sentence. And it's another one that doesn't make any sense. There were no weapons, there was no plan, there was no sustained aggression. It was just, you know, a tit for tat, if you like, that went horribly wrong. And I think most people will recognise that, you know, they can go to the pub on a Saturday night and some guy can come over, you know, puffing his chest out, having a go at you. And people need to realise that if anyone does actually do that to you and you throw a blow and, you know, and they die or sustain an injury, you and your friends or your girlfriend or your wife or whoever you're with that night, when this person it becomes aggressive to you and ends up with an injury, then you're going to go to prison for it, and your friends and your wife and your girlfriend and everyone with you will also go to prison, and they'll all get exactly the same sentence. And I think most people don't realise that. And I think most people who, if they'd heard Jared's case in an honest way rather than what was written in the newspapers, would say that it was self-defence. And most people, if they heard Jordan's case in an honest way in the newspapers, would ask why he was ever charged in the first place.
Can I ask a question, Janet? Was, you know, when she explained about what happened in the airplane, was that evidence heard in court?
I'm not aware of whether it was or not, but I think the actual what normally happens and what has happened in most of the cases I know about, the deceased, their character is never sort of disrespected in any way, shape or form. They're all almost treated as if they're some kind of hero or that they've got an unblemished character. I mean, nobody deserves to die. And, you know, I'll be the first person to say that. And it doesn't matter even if you're a nasty character. I still don't think you deserve to die. But I also don't think a courtroom is an honest courtroom if it doesn't actually give the full background of both parties. And as far as I'm aware, there was no real background given on the victim in Jared's case, and there was no real background given of our victim Gary Newlove, because, you know, people came forward after Jordan's conviction, and there were countless young people who had been, you know, at the aggression, under the hands of the aggression of Gary Newlove over the previous months. So it wasn't a case of him coming out of his house for the first time. He was a very angry man who'd done that on a number of occasions.
Coming back to what happened in the plane, should have been heard at a trial. If it hasn't been heard at a trial, that must be considered as fresh evidence to make clear it was self-defence.
Definitely. I totally agree with you.
That needs to be looked into. And also, which is more important, is the police officers from where the plane landed must be subpoenaed as fresh evidence, as the crew of the plane, as to people on that plane. That is fresh evidence to prove that he was the aggressor and he acted in self-defense. There can be no greater proof than that. And I think Amanda needs to track that down. I'll have a chat to her later on about it. But this is very, very important, because no appeal court can ignore that.
I totally agree. And I think Jared's got an appeal pending. He probably in sort of early new year. So I think that is definitely something that they need to take into it.
It needs to be heard and looked into before the appeal is heard, because even if they have to ask to put the appeal back, because you'll only get one chance at it, This, I feel, must be looked into because it has 100% self-defense. It can prove on the plane he was the aggressor when he wasn't even there. So she really needs it. I don't know if you're listening, Amanda, but this is really...
I am.
This is really powerful evidence that no court can overrule. And I'm rather shocked to say that your barrister or solicitor hasn't brought this up.
Can you hear me, Martin?
I can.
Yeah, it was brought up in court about the aeroplane. They know about it. It was said in court. It wasn't challenged. The Crown Prosecution, the judge, they didn't challenge it at all. They know about the lad's history. They knew of his violent behaviour. It was all said in court.
No, not just being said in court doesn't add a lot of weight as to the actual people who witnessed it. The place, where did you say they landed? In Dubai?
I think it was Dubai or Abu Dhabi. Yeah. It's halfway. But it was, I mean, you know, the legals, they got the evidence. They said all that, you know, and it wasn't... Nobody denied it, you know, nobody said it didn't happen or anything. They agreed that, yeah, they have got evidence there, and yet they did use it. They know of the lad's history. He had 30-odd other counts of violence against him.
Did the jury know that he got 30 other accounts of violence against him?
No, that was later on, wasn't it? That comes out afterwards. But they knew about the aeroplane. They knew about Jared being threatened two or three times previous to that, it being chased in the car. When Jared gave his evidence, the young man who got bit on the head, he gave evidence. He was one of the witnesses. And even he said in the court, I'm chancing saying this because he knew of the family and he knew of the repercussions. And the lad was shot at. You know, Jared's dad's house and Stephen's house, the co-defendant, they were petrol bombed.
I hear what you're saying, and I think your legal team made bad mistake not bringing a subpoena in the police and the airplane crew. They should be subpoenaed for the appeal court because that can be classed as fresh evidence. What they mentioned in the trial, they just talked about it. You need deep statements from the people who was on the plane, the pilot, the crew, and the police. Only that can be considered as fresh evidence. And I really think that you should sincerely look into this before the appeal.
Yeah, there's lots of things, Martin, that, you know... My other son, he's done like a piece of, well, he's done a document really, and there's 46 questions on it that, you know, he's asked the legals and they've said it was irrelevant, but there's lots of things, you know, prior to the incident happening, Jared and his friends were in a cafe having a breakfast, and the lad's friends were in the same cafe, and Jared believes that, you know, they overheard a conversation whereby, you know, the lads have said, you know, we'll go up to the sports shop and we'll do this and we'll do that, and they definitely know that lad was sent up there, you know, he was given the heads up on where Jared was going to be, because out of an entire car park, the lad was, you know, came right across, knew exactly where the car was, and exactly where to go. You know, I'm in the middle of an afternoon. You know, there was lots of things like that. You know, we know the CCTV footage that hasn't been shown from the cafe. You know, did the lads follow Jared out? And, you know, anything like that. There was lots of stuff that wasn't brought up. And yet, you know, the legals, they say, you know, it's not important to the case because it was joint enterprise.
Well, if you think about it, Mandy, the joint enterprise was actually against Jared by the victim and his friends. So to actually, it's a game between the barristers, and it's got nothing to do with the truth or what the jury need to know. Because at the end of the day, the joint, if Jared had have died, the guys in the cafe who sent the victim to attack Jared, all of them would have been classed as a joint enterprise, and it would have had a plan and a common purpose, and the end result would have been violence against Jared. They were the joint enterprise, and yet the courts flipped that on its side and blamed the original victim, which was always Jared. The original victim is now the perpetrator. And that seems to be what the courts do. And barristers and QCs, they don't care about the truth. And even your own barrister and QC doesn't seem to care about the truth. It's this mold that this is how we do it when it's called a joint enterprise, and we will not deter from it. And this is another reason why the law, it's not a law, it's a legal principle, but it changes with every given case. And with every given case, it gets weaker and weaker and weaker. Pretty soon, you'll be able to be asleep in bed, and they can come into the house and they can convict you of a murder, even though you were well away, fast asleep. In fact, I do actually know of someone who was in bed and asleep when a murder was committed, and she went to prison for it because her boyfriend killed someone. So we've even sunk to that level, that low level of evidence and a way of putting people in prison when they've got absolutely nothing to do with it.
Amanda, I would like to speak to you more on this. When the show's finished, I'll give you my phone number, because I can't understand how a barrister, your legal time, did not call them over as witnesses. That doesn't add up to me. If something is not right there. What barrister did you have?
The legal team at Linschool Solicitors in Liverpool.
The barrister.
The barrister is Alaric Walmsley. Oh, it's the QC. His name's Rick Pratt.
It something don't add up, because it's a clear, the evidence from the plane, the evidence from the police at Dubai is clear self-defense, and that needs looking into. That really needs looking into, and they should be called for the appeal. I'll speak to you, it would take too much time now, I'll speak to you off air about this, Amanda. Okay.
Thanks, Martin.
You're all right. Welcome, love.
All right, then I'm going to jump in here. Then I was actually going to say to Janet, when you said about somebody, you can actually be done for joint enterprise while sleeping, because I remember when you come on and did the first show, I've been told about that young woman in Sheffield. I think it was Sheffield area. I'm not 100% sure. And she was literally in bed sleeping while her boyfriend murdered somebody, and she is now serving, I don't know how long her sentence is, but she is now serving a life sentence in prison for a murder that was committed while she was in bed asleep, and she didn't know. It wasn't even a premeditated murder, it was one of these spontaneous things as well. This is what makes it so scary. You can actually literally be in bed asleep, and then before you know it, you're woken up in the morning by the police knocking on the door, and you are being done for murder, and you don't actually need any evidence really to convict somebody of joint enterprise. All you need is to be able to prove association. And so this is how you, both of you, ended up involved with Jengbo, isn't it? And both Janet and Amanda both ended up involved with Jengbo through first-hand experience of their sons not actually committing a murder, not actually wanting to fight anyone, not actually doing anything really to fight anyone. In fact, with Amanda's case, he tried his best to actually get out of it. Jordan's case, it all happened too quickly for Jordan to even see. Well, he was blind, he didn't see what happened, you know. These things aren't right, you know. Something is not right here. This is just rings alarm bells in my ears. That this is just not right at all, that people are being put in prison so easily. The fact that there's more people in prison for murder than what murders have been committed in the UK is alarming. And there is obviously some sort of agenda going on here. I don't know what that agenda is, whether it's a slave trade or what this agenda is, really. All I know is that it's got to be highlighted and it's got to be stopped. So So this is how you both ended up in Jengba. Do you want to tell us a little bit about Jengba, please, Janet?
Jengba started because when Jordan was convicted, there was a lady who was at, well, she first came to the courtroom when the boys were at the magistrate's court, and she was someone who worked for the BBC, and she was struck by how young my two sons were and how they behaved towards me, and couldn't understand how two lovely kids with a mum who they clearly loved could possibly be involved in a brutal murder. So, you know, she followed the case and could see clearly that something just wasn't right, and the gut feeling it wasn't right. So after the trial, we had the gagging order. So I couldn't actually... The world's media wanted to know the story of my feral wolf child, who was vicious and evil, and he'd smashed the head in of an innocent man. And all of that wasn't true. But I wasn't able to tell the truth about Jordan because I'd had the gagging order placed on me, and I wasn't allowed to tell anyone he was blind. So this particular lady, she worked for Panorama. So I rang her up, and pardon my language, but I said, if you've got the balls, you've got to help my child. And she came flying over to the house, and she said, yes, I will, because this stinks. And it my gut feeling is that this has gone horribly wrong. And she did a 2-year investigation, and Panorama did a program called Lethal Enterprise in, I think it was 2009. Jordan had been in prison for 2 years at this point. And it was the first time that we got anything like that resembled the truth. But obviously there was only a very small part of Jordan in there, because again, the gagging order wasn't lifted until Monday morning on the day that particular Panorama was actually put on air, which was on that same evening. So a lot of what Jordan's part had been cut out of it, but we still got it into the public domain that there was something called joint enterprise. And even if you're not the perpetrator or the knife man or the gunman or the kicker, you too will go to prison. So that was the springboard. And off the back of that, there was another lady on the programme, and Cheryl put us both together. And on meeting Gloria Morrison, who was also featured a little bit in the programme because of her son's friend Kenneth Alexander, we met each other, and the first thing we said to each other was, we need to get a national campaign. And we virtually said it at the same time as we looked at each other. Unfortunately for us, someone was watched Panorama and got in touch with us and offered us quite a nice sum of money to actually set up the Jengba campaign. So they built the original website, they gave us, you know, trademarked the name and all these kind of things, and gave us a purpose and a little bit of money so that we could actually start work on getting the campaign going and getting prisoners to get in touch with us and families to get in touch with us. And to be honest, you know, we've been around for a few years now, and I can't actually remember how we got so big so quick and how we managed to get the information that we did out so quickly, because within weeks we had 150 prisoners, and we released 150 balloons in Liverpool at our launch in Liverpool, and we released 50 white balloons because we thought, you know, there's going to be 50 more that we don't know about yet. Unbeknown to us, you know, there was more than 50, because we've now got over 500 cases. And the terrifying thought is that there's probably more like 5,000 people in prison, and they just don't know why they are there. So it all kind of started with Jordan and Ken and the Panorama, and the fact that me and Gloria met, and we met some absolute wonderful people on the way. And because these mums, and it usually is mums, they know, a mum knows whether her son is a murderer or not. I don't care what anyone says. You only have to look in your child's eyes and you know if he's a murderer or not. So none of us are deluded. We are, you know, we know our sons didn't kill anyone. So when we meet these women, we know that these women know that their sons didn't murder anyone. And we can tell that they know they didn't. So what has happened is a lot of like-minded women, and it is mostly women. There are one or two men who are fabulous as well. But It is mostly women, mostly mothers and a few sisters and perhaps girlfriends, but it's not normally mums. And because we love our children and because we will not let go and because we will fight until we die, Jengba has become a very, very strong female unit. We're all fighting. There are women. We do have cases of women, but it almost feels like we are the women fighting for our men. And we've got our claws out and we won't stop. And we go from strength to strength because every passing month, sadly, another case comes to us. Sadly, some other kid is being given a life sentence for something that they didn't do. But what comes with that is a very powerful mother who will not stand down. Like Mandy. Mandy only came to Jengba in the summer this year, but she's been phenomenal because she will not let go. She loves her son so much. She will not let this drop. And by being that kind of person, she gives added strength to Jengba, which is a campaign that needs as much strength as possible, because what we're fighting is just horrendous. We're fighting the government, we're fighting the prison system, we're fighting the high court judges, but we will fight them and we will not stop.
Great, and I'm sure you won't stop. And this isn't a case of a bunch of mothers seeing that their son does not do any wrong. You know, so don't start thinking that it's anything like that. These people that are standing up, like Janet, like Amanda, they can show beyond reasonable doubt that their sons have not murdered anyone. The courts know that their sons have not murdered anyone, you know. So why are they serving life sentences? It's wrong, you know. And the reason why Jengba has taken off so fast and so quickly, like Janet is saying, is because this has happened to so many people, and so many people are joining up, and so many people are taking notice because they know of somebody who this has happened to. And you know, this is more common than people think. And joint enterprise isn't just used in murder cases, is it? It's also used for other crimes. Is that right, Janet?
Yes. I mean, it is mainly used in murder cases. It used to be used in the bank robber scenario, but as far as I'm aware, I don't really know of any bank robber scenarios where it has been used. And the odd old case, the getaway driver who's supposed to be as guilty as the bank robbers who go in and kill someone in the bank. The actual getaway driver on the very few cases that I've heard about has actually got a not guilty. So even that as a joint enterprise scenario isn't what gets people put in prison for life sentences. But we've found that just assault cases and, you know, much more pettier crimes. So basically, pretty soon, if you're in the supermarket and your friend picks up a bar of chocolate and slips it in her pocket and walks out, pretty soon you'll find that, you know, you'll be going to court as a shoplifter because you should have known that your friend was going to pick that bar of chocolate up and put it in her pocket and not pay for it, because that's as simple as it is. You know, my son should have known that Stephen Sorton was going to kick Gary Newlove and that it would kill him. And that's why my son's in prison. Jared Childs is in prison because he should have known that when his friend came to rescue him and he threw that blow to the victim, that would kill him. And that sounds ridiculous, but people are going to prison because they're supposed to somehow have foresight that something would happen and know the end result. And that, to me, I mean, they're kind of predicting a one in a million chance. You know, we've all seen fights in pubs, and even when we were kids at school, there were always fights. So basically every fight we've ever seen, or every brawl in the pub, there's a million to one chance that any one of those could have led to someone's death, but it didn't. So we're putting, you know, these people are the million to one chance, basically, and they're being punished for being the million to one chance because they should have known this would happen. All the fights I've ever seen, someone could have died, but they didn't. You know, so why? You know, why should be in prison because of attempted murder? Then maybe because the person didn't die, but I should have thought that they could have possibly have died. It's just completely illogical. But like you say, it's moving into new territory now. It's moving into burglaries and just minor assaults as well. Minor assaults. you know, if your friend punches someone, then you're involved as well, and you're getting the same punishment. And when that happens, it means we haven't got any rule of law in this country. It means that we don't need real solid evidence, and we don't need to know the truth. And that's pretty scary, because if you can use the most diluted law in the land to put someone in prison for the most heinous crime in the land, then you can use it for absolutely everything. When we get to that point, there may as well not be any law at all.
Well said, well said. The thing is, what can we do to change it? The only people that can change the law is the MPs. Must drive it home to let them know, somehow or another, even if we have to send thousands and thousands of letters, we must try and get this law stopped. And the only way that they're going to do anything is we keep bombarding them with letters. Keep bombarding them, even if we have to stand outside the House of Commons and shout it and interrupt them. That is the only way they're going to listen. And anything I can do to help, I will speak to you off air and give you my suggestions.
That's great, Martin. That's absolutely great. Excellent. And then any suggestions that he does come up with, we will be airing on the last show, because the last show in this series is all what you need to do if this happens to you. And it could happen to you. It could happen to anyone. This could. And the thing that strikes me about this is I've got a friend who's in prison on joint enterprise, and my story with my friend, Paul Chambers, his name is, and he's in Gartry at the moment, and I always say this couldn't have happened to a nicer man. You know, a nicer man could not have been locked up in prison for a murder, is what I always say about Paul Chambers. It's exactly the same story. Somebody who is aggressive, somebody who is a bully, with a long history of bullying as well, this man had with in Paul Chambers' case, and in Amanda's case, and in Jordan's case, Gerard's case and Jordan's case, it's the same kind of thing, a bully. And since I've heard about this happening to Chambers, lots of people said to me, oh yeah, my friend who was a really nice bloke was being bullied for a long time by this other bloke. And then one day he decided to turn around and hit him, and he ended up dead. And they are serving life sentences. This is not right. In, you know, a society that protects bullies, that actually sends people that have been victims of bullying to prison because they've endured bullying for a long period of time, it's not right and it's not fair, and we all know that it's not right and it's not fair. And so now we've all got to decide what we're going to do about this. You know, we all live on this planet, we all live on this earth, and we all are under these rules to one point, to an extent or another. And so we all need to stand together, stand with Martin, stand with Jordan, stand with Gerard, stand with Paul Chambers, and we all need to stand together and say to the Ministry of Defence, this is not right. This is not right at all. So what I want to cover as well is how has it affected the other members of your family? You know, I'll start with Amanda this time because I always start with Janet. Amanda, how many people in your family, how has this affected all of you, you know, since this has happened to Gerard? Even the bullying, how has it all repercussioned in your lives?
Probably, you know, I can say with all honesty, you know, it's probably not affected me in the way that it's affected Jared's siblings and his dad, and because they actually still live in the same area where the incident took place. And as I said before, just, you know, prior to the trial, to the trial starting, both Jared's dad's house and Stephen's family's house got petrol bombed. You know, and that there was, my grandchildren were in that, you know, Jared's dad's house. My daughter, she lives in the same area. My other son and his little son, you know, they live just a few streets away from the victim's family. My daughter's had, you know, she's got babies, and she's been spat at. She's had stones thrown at her. In the middle of the street and stuff like that. And, you know, since then, they've had the fire service have been round and put like toughened safety glass in and covers over letterboxes and stuff like this. You know, and my daughter and my son, they've got to live in this area. The children go to school there and stuff like that. Myself, it's been probably more emotional for me as opposed to anything else, because I don't live in the same area, so I've not witnessed anything like this. But Jared's my baby. He's my youngest. And never to this... Well, I know it's only just 12 months because I think I mentioned earlier to Martin, this week it's 12 months since the start of the trial. It started on the 3rd of December last year, and it was 3 weeks, and Jared was sentenced. And then, you know, on the 20th of December, just before Christmas, I never will... You know, the first day that I've seen Jared in court, he was half the size of what I'd seen him previously. And never will I ever want to experience the look on my baby's face after me telling him, just be truthful, Jared. Tell the truth. You always tell the truth, and no matter what happens, you'll come home, you know. They'll listen to you, they'll understand. And I feel as though I let Jared down by saying that. I promised him, you know, no, everybody knew that Jared was innocent, that he hadn't done this. And right throughout, you know, but the look on Jared's face when they said guilty, that is something that will shake me to the core. And I don't like to think about it, because there's just nothing at all I could do to, you know, I just wanted to hold him, and there's nothing. So that's what, how it affects me, is when I think of my son, and somebody's locked him away, and there's nothing I can do about it, other than just shout as much as I can to anybody who'll listen to me, really. Jared's innocent.
And we will certainly help you to shout. You won't be on your own in this fight. I wish I could bottle up what you had to say there and let the judges listen to it. Let the appeal court judges listen to it. And let the people, your legal team that defended him, listen to it. It's just so, so sad. And the whole population of working class people must come together to put a stop to all this injustice. How many more mothers must cry like this? How many more girlfriends, brothers, fathers must suffer like this? And it's just the working class they seem to pick on. Surely we must approach the unions and everyone to unite and help get rid of this wicked system. Over to you, Sarah.
And that is what it's about, you know. That's what we've been trying to get with your campaign, isn't it, Martin? Just everyone, just stand up and say, yeah, we know about this. We know what you're doing. We can see what you're doing, and we're not having it anymore, you know. And it takes all of us to stand together and say this for any difference to be made. I want to hear Janet's side as well. Come on, Janet, you've got two sons, have you? How has this affected you and your family?
It's just, it's, as with Amanda, it completely ruins you. I mean, Gareth was charged with Jordan. They were both 15 years old, and they both went through the trial process. So when Jordan got the guilty verdict, he made a howling noise like a little animal, and he was hunched up. And the first thing he did, he turned around to grab hold of his brother, because he didn't want his brother to get a guilty verdict. He got the guilty verdict, and he was such a loving, gorgeous boy that through his own pain of getting a guilty verdict, the first thing on his mind was, please God, don't let my brother get that as well. So Gareth was given a not guilty. And, you know, I mean, that day, that afternoon, you know, they sent them back down to the cells. And Gareth went back down to the cells with Jordan, who was lay on the floor, locked in a cell, screaming that, but how can you do this when you know that I didn't do anything? And they've told the jury I didn't do anything, and everyone knows I haven't done anything. And Gareth, they had to drag Gareth back up out of the cells because he shouldn't have been there, but he clearly wanted to stay with his brother. When Gareth did finally go to visit Jordan, he actually sat in the visit room and sort of said, you know, he's got 12 years. How do you feel about me doing six and him doing six, and we'll do it together? You know, so, but that was what they were like, that brotherly, they were like twins. There's only 10 and a half months between them. They were like twins. They slept in the same room and, you know, up until that point. But it's been 7 years now. Gareth lost Jordan 7 years ago. And it's that brotherhood love that they've always had for each other. It's still there, but that relationship that they should now have, it's gone and it'll never come back. It's been destroyed, because when you lose your brother for 7 years and you don't see him every day for 7 years and you can't speak to him, and, you know, you can't have your little fights and your tussles and your arguments, and you can't go out and find your first girlfriends together, they've lost that, and nothing and no one in the whole world will ever be able to give those two young lads that back. That those teenage, crucial teenage years were stolen, not just from Jordan, who was put in prison, but from his brother, who was acquitted. And I've had to watch, you know, my two beautiful boys who look so alike and who are so similar in age, who should be travelling the same journey together in front of me, and I'm incapable of bringing them together and watching them turn. You know, I should have watched them both blossom into two young men, but we haven't been allowed to do that. And you know, I when I'm an old lady, I look back and there'll be a huge part of my children's lives that, you know, will just be memories. The only memories I'll have are devastation. And there aren't any words that can describe what it does to you. I mean, my parents, my family, my mother, you know, I found myself having to pick myself up off the floor in order just to get downstairs and make a cup of tea every morning. I was dead, absolutely dead. I wished I was dead. If I could have just died in the middle of the night, then that would have been the most wonderful thing in the world for me. But I then pretty quickly realised Jordan needed me to stay alive in order to help him. Because he wanted to be dead as well. And, you know, for the first 3 years in prison was about stopping him from committing suicide. And that is the God's honest truth, because, you know, this was a little boy in prison, blind, who was then put into a YOI, absolutely terrified. His whole life had been destroyed. So every day on the phone was about making sure he didn't commit suicide, because I loved him too much to have to lose him to a death that was, you know, that he didn't have to have, because he'd done absolutely nothing wrong. But then I realised my mum was devastated, because she was in agony. She says to me to this day that however devastated I am, she's twice as devastated, because she had to watch her baby go through this with her baby. And I can't kind of understand that now, because I know that if one day my children have children and this happens to them, I wouldn't be able to, you know, I just wouldn't be able to get over it. So I've spent the last 7 years not only keeping my own self sanity and myself together, but keeping Jordan alive, keeping Gareth alive, keeping my mum alive, keeping everyone emotionally intact, in order for us to survive this, because we have to survive, because none of us have done anything wrong. And if we sit down and let this, you know, take over us and ruin us, then we've given up, and we can't give up because we have done nothing wrong. And to give up might look as if we have done something wrong, but we haven't. But when you talk about people coming together as well, I'm also, you know, there's 500 Jemba prisoners who've been in touch with us, which you would imagine means there's 500 mothers and 500, well, 1,000 grandmothers. And 1,000 girlfriends, you know, 500 girlfriends and brothers and sisters. So, you know, there should actually be about 20,000 of us if you combine everyone's friends and families and communities. But there aren't, because when this happens, people are so devastated that everything in their heart that they want to do, they are so broken and destroyed that it's absolutely impossible. It's impossible to just get out of bed in the morning. So the few people that do get out of bed and do try so hard, even if it's only for a week, you know, I've got the utmost respect for them, because I know what it was like in the first 3 years for me. It was awful. And Mandy's, you know, a year anniversary for her son in court this month. It's actually the 7th year anniversary for my son. But you know, it's always painful, but as the years go by, it becomes a different pain, and you actually cope with that pain you use it in a different way, and you push it towards using it against, if you like, the bastards who did this to us, because we've done nothing wrong, and we will generate all that energy that we've got to fight in this rather than lying down like dogs and dying and taking it. But it is hard. There are no words. I would rather be dead. I would say to anyone that if they could choose to die or have a child who becomes a miscarriage of justice, I would actually tell them to choose death over this, because this is more painful.
Well,
yeah,
Well said. It's a pity we couldn't, if we could record this and send the recording of the mothers to every MP, judge, the lot, so they can hear the tears from the heart. No one is listening to their tears. No one that matters. And we got to try and get it to the MPs, to the judges, and to the barristers. Get off your backside and do something. That is what I say.
It is being recorded, but at this point, I'm going to ask your Val. Val, are you there?
I am here, Sarah.
I want to hear from you what it was like for you then.
Well, my heart goes out to these people that I've just been listening to. I've really been choked as I've been listening to it. I know we've had our problems all through our years, and we fought long and hard to get where we've got to now, and it really affected my children at the same time. It was killing us every time we've seen Martin in prison, and we had to leave him behind. And we was just heartbroken all round, and I just know how these people feel. My heart goes out to them.
Thank you, Val. Thank you for your input there. Val, your internet's not the best really today, but I think that got through loud and clear, you know. Do you want to mute your mic up now then, Val, please? That's okay, it's a bit crackly. Thank you, brilliant. It was brilliant to hear from Val, because she's been going through this for nearly 40 years, really, Val has been with Martin. When you meet Martin and his family, you think how lucky they are in so many ways to have such a beautiful family and to be with that support. That's what's got Martin through this. You know, Martin wouldn't be where he is sat today if it wasn't for his family. He knows that better than anybody, you know. And it is the fact that people have got this love for their loved ones, you know. But I feel for the people that have been put away in prison for joint enterprise or for crimes that they haven't committed. I haven't got this support. It's just horrendous, and this is why it's even more important for people with the loved ones to stand up and everyone, all of us, to stand up against this. This show is being recorded and it is being archived. You can look it on the archives on www.darkcityradio.com, and the archives, click on the archive tab, It can be downloaded as well for free, so anyone can download it, because Dark City Radio is an open source. So we can pass this and share this show about and pass it on to the judges. We can get this out everywhere. But it's not just about us getting it out everywhere. We've got a petition online at the moment for Martin, and we want to encourage more people to sign this petition. And you can find the petition on Martin's events page, which is Justice for Martin Forum and Other Innocent People. And also the petition is on the Dark City Radio TV group, and also on the Dark City Radio page. So, you know, we want more people signing this petition as well, and we want more people. We need to all stand together. We need to all stand together and say we're not having this anymore. It's more of us than there is of them. So there's strength in numbers. So we really do need to get this out there. We really do need to get these messages, and we need to stand up together. We either lie down, as Janet says, like dogs, and die, and just let this go over us. Oh, it's just somebody else being in prison. That I don't know them. It's nothing to do with me. It doesn't really matter. Oh, somebody else will sort it out. Somebody will get on it one day and sort it out. It's not up to me. It's nothing to do with me. I've got to get up in the morning. I've got work. I've got this. I've got that. You know, rather than taking that attitude, we all need to take this attitude of, hang on a minute, no. Enough is enough. I'm not having this. I don't like bullies. I won't be bullied myself, you know. Bullying is a really not very nice place for anyone to be, you know. And the amount of stories that I've heard of innocent people being put in prison because they've been bullied, you know, they're getting bullied on an individual individual level. So they're having to fight, and then because they're having to fight, somebody's died, and then they're ended up in prison, and they didn't even start in the first place. And then the next thing they know, they're getting bullied by the state, and then the state bullies them and puts them in prison. And it's like what I was saying in the first show. These people who end up in these situations, they think, I'm innocent. I've heard this so many times. I'm innocent. I've got nothing to worry about. It doesn't, I'm be okay. You know, I'm innocent. Everyone's going to believe me. How can, no, that's not going to happen to me. They have the attitude that you've got right now, thinking, oh, it's not going to happen to me. I've got work in the morning, or I've got a Y in my shirt. They've got that exactly the same attitude, you know. Oh, it'll be all right. It'll all be good. I'm innocent. I know I'm innocent. People will be able to see. They'll be able to see I'm innocent. You know, all the evidence is pointing that. All the evidence is showing I'm innocent. You know, this is what people are thinking. And lo and behold, they've got 12 years. And everyone knows they're innocent. We all know they're innocent. The evidence is pointing and saying they're innocent.
What we need, can I just interrupt you a minute, Sarah?
You certainly can.
We need, the Bible says, love thy neighbour. Put that to the test outside the churches and ask them to pray for the neighbour. And if the churches will speak out, we can put a stop to this, because they go on their knees every Sunday and they go in there. Open their eyes to what's going on. Give a leaflet, ask for a prayer, ask them to write to their MPs, and don't take no for an answer. Come back again and again until they start to realise, oh, something wrong here. And that's what we must do. And Janet and Amanda, if you're going to take it to the churches, we will come and stand by your side. And make them listen. I'm not hesitant to go up in the pulpit and speak my mind. I've done it in quite a few churches. I've done it over Liverpool. And I've done it in Birmingham. I've done it in Manchester. Open up and make them listen. And you will not get, if they don't know, everyone, it's, you have to educate the public. Educate, start with the churches, the vicars, the priests, the Mormons, every religion under the sun, and make them listen. And that is a good starting point to reach the public. And I will back you 100%. Back to you, Sarah.
And Martin knows what he's talking about, because he's won two appeals. So, yeah, please, this is why we've got Martin on here. It's for him to get his story out, and also to let you know how he's done it. And this is how he's done it. He has got to the churches. You know, God's word is above theirs, you know. it's, it all works like that with them, doesn't it? You know, it's unbelievable, really, what does actually go on in this so-called legal and justice system, you know? So, right, Janet, I'm back on you again now, Janet. So we've heard what's happened in the past, right? We heard what's happened to Jordan and how you've ended up in this terrible circumstances, and we've heard what you're doing now. You've joined Jengba, you started Jengba. So what are you planning on doing in the future about Jordan? How are you planning on taking this further? What are you actually planning next?
But Jordan's case is now back, is at the CCRC, and everything, Martin will know this, everything takes years, but he finally got his application to the CCRC, and he'll be given a caseworker in February. But I'm going to work closely with them, because there are, like Mandy said before, with her son's case, you know, Jared's brother had a list of at least 40 questions that, you know, and if you answered them, they would prove his innocence, basically. It's the same with Jordan. The actual trial process did prove Jordan was innocent, because it proved he didn't inflict the blow. and he was put in prison for foresight, and that's it. He should have had the foresight to know that someone else was going to do this, even in a spontaneous 5-second affray. So I'm going to work closely with the CCRC to explain, you know, if you've got, you know, what is foresight? How can you put someone in prison for murder who didn't murder anyone on the basis of having possible foresight? And I think the CCRC have got their hands tied on that, because it's not actual real evidence, and we've got to convince them that you know, if a case comes to them and that's what the basis of the conviction is on, then they have to start saying, do you know what, it has to be viewed as unsafe, because, you know, it's not powerful evidence that's putting people in prison. It's actually the most flimsy, superficial evidence known to man. And the CCRC have to start recognising that this terrible, flimsy evidence is not appropriate, and saying, you know, you don't need new, fresh evidence that proves, you know, you didn't do it, because they already have that. We've all already got that, you know, the girl in bed asleep, the woman in the bath when her husband gets shot, my son who was blind and at least 10-15 yards away from the crime when it happened, Jared who'd already been pulled away from the guy who had accosted and assaulted him. We all, you know, the evidence is there to prove that these people didn't commit the crime. It's now about getting the justice system to open up and recognise that how they've put these people in prison is completely wrong. It's immoral. It's unjust. It's unfair, because, you know, my son got a 12 year life sentence. There are kids who've got 25 and 30 years. You know, you can't expect someone to go to prison for 30 years because they may have had possible foresight that someone else might have caused a death. In whatever circumstances, you can't expect people to go to prison for that. So the fight now is getting the appeal courts and the CCRC to recognise that the evidence that have put people away is so weak that it should never have been used in the first place, and it shouldn't be part of our justice system. And Jengba's already had a brief inquiry with the Justice Select Committee. We've had two inquiries, and there will be a report out just before Christmas on the final inquiry. But basically, the final inquiry on joint enterprise proved it to be racist and targeting Black and Asian communities and targeting working class people. It doesn't affect people who live in big houses, people who work in government, because, you know, the expenses fiasco, that was a joint enterprise. The bankers, that was a joint enterprise. All of these people who are in positions of power or have an incredible amount of money, it is a pure and simple joint enterprise. They've robbed from the public. They've thieved from us knowingly, all of them in it together. And yet they don't face anything, no prosecution whatsoever. And yet children who are walking home on a day out, who are accosted by a complete stranger, and there's a fight that ends in tragedy, based on two people having a fight and you having nothing to do with it, and yet they're going to prison for the rest of their lives. So the justice system hasn't got any balance at the moment, and our fight now is to say, if you want balance, put the bankers in prison. Then I'll accept it. Put all of the bankers who robbed us and created the economy that we've got now, which is absolutely busting, put them all in prison. All the MPs and the civil servants who allowed the expenses to go through. Okay, if you're right and this is what a joint enterprise is, put them all in prison as well, and I'll shut up. But they won't put any of those people in prison. And if they won't put those people in prison, then they've got to let our people out of prison, because we are less guilty than they all are. So that is the fight that we're trying to get through to government and to MPs right now, that if it's good enough for us, then it's got to damn well be good enough for you lot as well.
Too right. I couldn't agree with you anymore.
And I agree with you.
We all do, don't we? I think everyone does, really, to be honest. You know, nobody could put their hand on their heart and say otherwise, really, you know. I'm going to ask you the same question, Mandy, yeah? Are you there, Mandy? You keep cutting in and out. It doesn't seem like she is.
I am here. I can hear you.
All right. What are you doing now then about your Gerard's case?
I think Jan mentioned before, Gerard's appeal. It should be any time now. We got told it would be in November. But we've had no data or anything at the moment, so it's possibly looking, you know, if we don't get something within the next week or so, then it's going to be in the new year. But, you know, again, Gerard's been, he's been told by his legal team that there's a very strong possibility that the charge is going to be dropped from murder to manslaughter. But if that's the case, then it's Gerard that will serve the time for manslaughter and Stephen for a fray, even though Stephen admits throwing the punch. You know, he stood in court and said, "Gerard, it was me, I done it." Because of the joint enterprise, because otherwise it'll mean that there was intent. So Gerard has to take the rap for something that Stephen done in order for Gerard to get a lesser charge. If you understand that. I know I don't really understand it, and Jan probably does understand it a lot more and can explain it more. But still, it's just, you know, it's Gerard's been given, you know, a plea bargain to me. You know, he's got to accept that he's guilty of manslaughter in order to get his time reduced. Not, I know for a fact that Gerard will accept anything if it means him coming home sooner, because he's in a terrible, terrible state at the moment. And he just wants to come home. He just, not that he can go home to where he lived anyway. He's never going to be able to do that again. You know, but he just wants to come. He just wants to be with his fiance. He wants to see his family. And he just doesn't cope. He's not coping. So we just want this over and done with. You know, he just needs to know what the outcome's going to be, so he at least knows what's going on. And that's what hurts more than, you know, because I know that my son's really suffering.
Well, it's not easy. You know, I've focused a lot on what it's like for the family. You listening to you just then, it makes you think, well, it is just horrendous for the person that's actually going through it as well, you know, to actually be locked up in prison and just hear that gate and the cell door lock and just know that you shouldn't be in there. I know what it feels like for somebody to accuse me of something silly that I haven't done or something that I haven't done. You know, I know how frustrating that can be and how much, it might annoy me when I'm going to sleep at night, or it might annoy me when I'm waking up in the morning and things like that. But on this kind of a scale, it is just unbelievable, you know, to the frustration that these people must feel, you know, Jordan, Martin, Gerard, and the hundreds of others, well, 500 that are on Jengba's list, but also Paul Chambers, my friend Paul Chambers, who is innocent. You know, for them every single day to wake up and to know that they haven't committed a crime, they haven't murdered anybody. You know, I haven't murdered anyone. Why am I serving 15 years? Why am I in here for 30 years? You know, what is this all about? What happens to these people to put them in a position? Why to do this to others? You know, why would anybody do this to others? It's just beyond me. Well, not beyond me. It's below me. I would never understand it. I will not comprehend it. To me, it seems to be about money or figures and something along them lines. You know, the prisons make a lot of money. Every time you end up in prison, each prisoner generates a hell of a lot of money for a lot of organisations. So we've only got 2 minutes left, and so we haven't got very long. Janet, do you want to say anything about what you're planning on doing next? It's not very long to say anything, but do you want to say what you're planning on doing next?
Yeah. Well, I think the most important thing for people to listen to, anyone who's listening to your show tonight who's never been affected by joint enterprise, to take into account that should anything happen, regardless of what it is, and you and more than one person get charged with whatever that offence is, whether it's a fray or murder or just, you know, any offence whatsoever, and you all get arrested and charged with it, before you go to trial, regardless of how much you know that you can prove it wasn't you, the best thing to do would go onto our website, www.jointenterprise.co. There's two phone numbers on there, and give one of us a ring, because we can give you we can't give you legal advice because we're not legals, but there is a little bit of advice that we can give you that might either get the case dismissed before it goes to trial or give you the best possibility of getting found not guilty, because we found that lawyers don't tell you the best way of not being found guilty, because they don't actually care. So your best bet every time is to contact Jen Webb before you go to trial, because our cases always seem to contact us once they've lost, once they've been convicted, and it's too late. It's too late for, you know, we can help with the appeal process, but we, you know, once the conviction's been gained, you're talking about years and years and years before you can get it overturned, if in fact you can ever get it overturned.
What the public needs to learn as well, it could happen to them. It happened to us. It happened to you. They must face up to the facts. It could happen to them. It's no use sitting at home thinking, oh, it's not our problem. It'll be your problem when it happens to you. If we stand together, we can stop it happening to anyone else.
You're absolutely right, Martin, because about 6 years ago, I'd done something on TV and I'd been doing my bit about Jordan, and two people came and found me after both their sons had been convicted, and one of the ladies actually cried and said that she'd seen me on the news the year before and gave the sort of, oh, listen to her banging on about X, Y, Z, and didn't believe a word I said. Her son's now doing 27 years for a murder he didn't commit. So basically she heard what I'd said. Her son got arrested, got charged, went to trial. She still didn't believe what I said until, of course, he got 27 years for a crime he didn't commit. And there's a man as well who also did the same. He said he'd listened to what we'd said and thought, you know, he believed what I was saying, but thought we were just unfortunate to have bad lawyers, and his son's now doing 30 years. So,
Janet, can I just interrupt off a minute? What about someone from your organisation running for MP? Get a voice in the House of Commons.
I mean, we've often talked about that because we're all over the country. We're in different towns all over the country, and we have actually thought about that. You know, sort of running, actually having our own political party, and sort of running 5, 6, 7 of us in different towns up and down the country, because we have got a lot of support in certain places,
and it will show them that we are not going to shut up.
Absolutely.
If it's serious thought about running for a party or starting your own party and getting, and if the prisoners can get a vote, look at the votes that can come from prisons. We want the working class people behind us to change this heartbreaking and horrendous law. Unless we come together, we're not going to change it. Stand for an MP or even for the local government. Let them know we're not going to take it lying down. Start off with councillor and build up. What do you think, Sarah?
Absolutely.
I couldn't agree more. I really do think it's in numbers, and I think that we all need to stand up. We all need to sign Martin's petition to start with. We all need to finish off this Jenga one. It doesn't need much further, much more signatures, but we all need to join forces and say, look, we're not going to be picked off one by one and put into prison. We're not going to be picked off one by one and made to work in jobs that we don't like. We're not going to be picked off one by one and forced to do this, that and the other. We're not going to be bullied and made to give it half our wages, and you know, we need to start standing up for our rights. You know, when are we going to stand up as a race of human beings and say, hang on a minute, I've had enough of you taking the beep out of me. You know, it's about time we all stood together and did something about it. You know, whether that be like we say we're not going to pay our taxes anymore until you release all these free, all these innocent people. Whatever it is, we all need to stand together and do it, because we have got the power. We just got to realise it, that the strength is behind us, not behind them. We have the numbers, we have the knowledge, we have the experience, we have it all. We have everything within this population to be able to do something about this, to be able to move together, forward together. Now, people make mistakes, people do things wrong, people get sucked up into their own world and think that they're doing the right thing, or think that they can get away with things, or whatever it is that they are doing. I'm not really sure. I'm not on about killing anyone. I'm not on about us all having a vigilante against the government and overthrowing them. I'm not on about anything like that. I'm just on about the people saying, look, we're not having this. You are telling us what to do when you haven't got a clue about decent basic morals, decent basic understanding of what it's like to be a human being. You haven't got any of these. So how come you're telling us what to do? We need to all work together in a proper democracy. Not this pretend democracy, but in a proper democracy. And we need to say what we want and what we believe to be right. We really do.
Well said, Sarah. Well said. Let's join together and beat them at their own game. Let's try and get into the councils and into the House of Commons. That's the only way we're going to change.
Exactly.
Yeah, it certainly is. And it's true about a lot of movements and a lot of ways that we are. A lot of, you know, I've been putting a lot of time into the cannabis movement, you know, and how it works to heal cancers and things. And it's exactly the same with that, you know. We all need to just stand to, I'm not following your laws. I'm not abiding by your laws when my fellow brothers and sisters are dying because of it. When my fellow brothers and sisters are locked up in prison for crimes that they didn't commit, and they've proved in a court case beyond reasonable doubt that they were not guilty of the offence, and yet you still choose to lock them up. How is that possible, you know? Why isn't every single one of us standing up and saying, hang on a minute, this isn't right, we're not having it. I just can't believe it. It just makes me want to stand up even more and say even more. You know, it's just too much, you know. We all need to get together, get our heads together and figure out a way out of this. All of us, you know, and it's not about persecution of the people who put us here either. It's not about any of that. It's about working together, all of us working together. So if any one of them are listening, the Ministry of Justice or anyone is listening, let's work together to solve this, because we're not having it anymore. Us, the people, have decided that we are not going to be bullied by you anymore, and we are going to come together and we are going to stand together for what's right. I'm going to stand with my brothers and sisters. I'm standing with Martin. I'm standing with Gerard. I'm standing with Jordan. I'm standing with anybody, and Paul Chambers, anyone in that situation. I stand with them. I stand with pride and love, and I'm not going to take it anymore. I don't know about you, but I'm not going to take it anymore. isn't it?
Yeah, well said. Well said.
Okay, so that's it. So really, so the basic things that we've got from this radio show is basically like what we've got from the first one, you know. If you do end up in this kind of situation, do not take a duty brief. Do not just go along and think, I'm okay because I'm innocent. You know, that's not how this system works, as we can see from these cases. That is not how this system works. You are not necessarily going to be okay. You know, we just need to learn to stand together more, really, isn't it, Martin?
If we don't stand together, they divide us. We must stand together and speak with one voice. And if we have to take it to Parliament, we'll take it. Take it to the councils. Take it to the churches. Start at the churches and build up. And Jan and Amanda, I'll support you 100%. We need the working class people behind us. Let's start at the churches and make them listen. We must make them listen.
We will do. We will do. We'll all, you know, we all know each other now. So definitely.
We need a lot more, and get those people who are going every Sunday morning on their knees to think of us. Because we must get people to know, reach out to them and let them know, even by asking them to say a prayer, just get across, ask them to write to the MPs. Anything, the more voices that's heard, the more voices will shake the MPs. They're coming up for election soon. Let's teach them a lesson. Follow them around and let them know. They won't like it. They will not like it. So we must unite together. And if you're having any meetings, don't forget to invite me.
We certainly will. We'll definitely invite
Martin. In 2012, a group of radio enthusiasts were told they couldn't broadcast without a license. These folk promptly escaped the clutches of a maximum security corporate system, the open source community. Today, still wanted by the state, they broadcast as soldiers of freedom. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, if you can find them, maybe you can hire the Dark City Radio Crew.